Hi, everybody. This is Sean Decker. We're back again in session two of People. And again, remember that the topics for all the subjects is going to be knowledge, numbers, people, time, and influence. And we're on session two of People. And the next subject we're going to jump into is learning styles. And I had briefly touched in it last CD, which is student, teachers, mentors, and talkers. Students, really, is kind of one of the simplistic forms, is they learn. They're not expected to teach, nor to input, usually by the desired teacher, or depending upon the teacher. So that being said, lots of times as a student, when you're sitting, especially in like a large seminar thing or a big event, or even, you know, in a lot of your colleges, those kind of things, you talking is really irrelevant other than to show the teacher that you're actually paying attention. And so lots of times that's just not your job. You're not to teach everybody. You're not supposed to, again, did they ask you? They didn't ask you. So go back to kind of some of the principles on the last CD. If they didn't ask you, why are you doing all the talking? And then on the next thing is teacher. They teach. Very rarely are they interested in learning from you. They're not your student. Now, does that mean that a teacher doesn't want to learn? And the answer is no. Most teachers are really actually avid learners. And so they're very interested in looking at people's different perspectives, different point of views. They want to hear the different point of views, and they really do want to understand. But typically, the best situation is to reference material that they respect before bringing up a contradicting issue. So if you do want to say something to a teacher that you think that they might not receive, one of the points would be to bring up something or a reference in which they would respect the material. And so this is how you can sometimes have a correlation as a student with a teacher without seeming arrogant or prideful or a know-it-all or those type of things, is to bring up some different materials in which they have respect for. If they don't have any respect, the question is are they going to receive anything from you? Most of the time, they're not going to receive from you. And number two, they're not wanting to learn from you. They probably know most of the material by heart, with you being an amateur in the subject, acting like you know everything about the subject. So most of the time, it's not your thing. Now, can you add some stuff? Can you add some different perspectives? Can you add some different point of views? Sure. But did you spend the additional time that is necessary to learn the material that they're teaching before you decided to add all your additional input to it? So that's kind of that side on the teacher. Now, the next one is mentor and coach. Mentor and coach are different. A mentor will tell you what to do. A coach will get you to come up with the same conclusion that he may already have. So lots of times it's more about making you or teaching you how to think for yourself. Now, I have been actually more of a mentor than I've been a coach. Now, I have learned a lot of the coaching material and am increasing in coaching, and am also working on certifications, specifically in mastering of coaching. And the reason why that is because lots of times if I just tell you the answer, it's the same proverb of if I feed you a fish or if I teach you to fish. So if I teach you how to ask yourself the right questions, again, the whole value seminar, if I can teach you how to value things properly, how to ask the right question, then what will happen is you'll be able to come up with the answer yourself. And that's what a coach does. A mentor just tells you the answer. He just says, here's the fish. Go eat. And both are useful. Now, again, one of the principles I had taught in a previous class was your learning curve. Is you have a learning curve, so you have a backwards L-style graph. And so on the bottom, it would say time. And then on the right, it would say effort. And everybody's heard of the phrase the learning curve. And so you start in the bottom left-hand corner, and you go up at a high curve to the top right, and that's called a learning curve. Well, a learning curve is what is necessary for you to become skilled in a particular knowledge set, gifting, or etc. Now, in order to cut the distance or the amount of time, now one thing I did bring up in one of the commentaries was just because time passes doesn't mean you actually learn anything. So without any effort, there is no learning to the curve. Or no curve to the learning without any effort. Now, this is where people have been in a field for 20 years and their junior comes and surpasses them. Why? Because they put in a lot more effort over a shorter amount of time. So this is how you can have someone under somebody that can surpass them because of the fact of that they put in more effort than their mentor did for a amount of time, but here was the real key, is that they learned everything their mentor did, and so it puts them at a straight path to the top of the effort chart. And so therefore they can cut the time because of their mentor. And so one of the a particular minister, Kenneth Hagin, he made the comment to some people that he was teaching. He says, my job is to take 50 years of knowledge and shove into you in the 2 years that you're here. See, that is what? Your learning curve. Let me take your curve, cram it down to 2 years, and get you 50 years of knowledge in 2 years. See, that's the whole point of a mentor. And so, that's one of the reasons why a mentor slash coach. So, those, you can use both, but lots of times they really do the exact same thing. Now, here's one of the things that you need to realize about a mentor and a coach. They are not your friend. They are never your friend. They are not your student. They are not your teacher. They're not really trying to teach you, say, information alone. They are trying to teach you a skill set. They are trying to teach you something. Really, they're trying to teach you how to learn, is really what they're doing. They're not necessarily teaching you to be a student or a teacher. They're teaching you how to learn and how to come up with the problem yourself, usually from experience. And so, but here's one thing about mentors and coaches. If you want to keep them, they expect progress and change. If you ever want to keep a mentor and a coach, matter of fact, and it's called CAYM, which is Christian Association of Youth Mentors. It's a certification which I will either have probably before this is published or have been working on. And one of the things that they make you do when you get a prodigy is that they make you sign an agreement. In other words, I'm going to devote X amount of time into mentoring you per week, but you're going to agree to do some of the information and those things that I suggest so that I can establish some progress. So, and the thing is if they forsake their agreement, your mentorship or your agreement or documentation that you have signed becomes null and void because they're not keeping their end of the deal up. So this also should be established on the front end. Remember, givers and receivers versus exchangers and takers. So this has to be established on the front end. So if I say that, okay, you want to be a mentor or a coach, that's fine. So I'm going to tell you what some general expectations are. I want to expect some progress. If there's no progress, then you're actually just wasting my time and you're a taker. You're just taking my time. Now, one of the things that we do is we try to get compensation for time. Why? Because really lots of times we do this type of stuff and people won't do anything with it. They just want information. They don't actually want to apply any of it. They just want the information. But just information will not help you. And that kind of gets us on to the next one. I call them talkers. They just want to talk. they talk about what they want to do, but they never do anything. Or I call them fence sitters. Half of one foot on one side of the fence and half the foot on the other side of the fence. And you try to get them to come up with, hey, you know, well, the grass is greener on this side of the fence. Well, then get off in that side of the fence. And one of the ones is, I heard not too long ago, it says that if the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, why don't you try watering yours? And see, lots of times a talker just wants to talk about the grass. Hey, you see that grass? It's brown grass. See that grass? It's green grass. Oh, this grass is that grass. And it's all nice if you want to hear about grass. And then, you know, year after year after year after year, they want to talk about, oh, well, my grass is still brown. Well, go get a sprinkler. Do something to cause your grass to grow. Stop talking about it. Become a student. Learn how to get under somebody. Learn how to ask some questions. Put some effort in it. But see, that's the reason with the talker, is a talker just wants to talk. And the problem with that is they don't ever actually get anywhere. There's no real progress. And so that being said, that can cause a bunch of problems because they don't actually get anywhere. And so if you're a mentor, and I mean, you've seen it, they come up to you, they say, hey, I really need some advice. You're like, okay, so what's the problem? Well, so-and-so did this, and so-and-so did that, and so-and-so did this. And you go, okay, and you listen to it. Well, I think you should do that. Well, you know, but this, and this happened, and this, and this happened, and this, and this happened. And you go, okay, well, I still think that the original was the correct advice. Yeah, but you don't really understand. See, they don't actually want a solution. They just want to talk about the problem. And so this is where one of the big problems is these are not your doers. They're just your talkers. Doers, you can be a mentor or coach to, and you say, hey, I would recommend XYZ, and then they go do it. Now, this is one of the things that you were kind of, what would be the phrase is, intrigued by me. I was sitting at the back at some of your seminar classes, and I only looked as if I was a student that wasn't paying attention because you were the teacher. But several years later, you start realizing everything I taught the dude, he's doing, and even though he wasn't saying anything, because see, I wasn't talking about any of it. I wasn't saying, hey, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, or I didn't say any of that. And so you thought I wasn't interested because I wasn't talking about it, but I'm not a talker, I'm a doer, and so I don't have to talk about it because I need to try to figure out a way to implement it. Because in order to be a great student and learn from a great mentor, you actually have to spend the time to put in some change and some progress, because then you can keep your mentors and your coaches.
It's so funny, too, because we're similar in a lot of these things. Kimberly and I used to go to a lot of marketing seminars, especially down in Atlanta. One of our mentors, Matt Basak, would host a lot of events there. And I used to always remember a lot of times if he was teaching personally, if it was like more of a training event, it'd be him and one other person for the whole weekend. Well, they give us the binder, they give us the notes and the different tools and stuff they're teaching on. We're literally using them, putting them in play as he's teaching. So he might think, hey, these guys aren't paying attention. Sometimes we go to the weekend events, and you've seen me host some of these where you have several speakers and they're talking about their different tool or their different strategy or coaching or whatever they're doing. We could only attend usually 25 or 30% of those talks because we literally want to implement. If we took one thing and made it work, it was worth six figures to us.
Oh, yeah.
And so we actually went to one event We only attended the first day, and we missed the rest of the weekend. But we implemented one thing that was worth $200,000 to $300,000 to us that year, just by implementing it. So, you know, I think that's important for people to realize. Any of these one strategies that Sean puts out could improve your life tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. But you got to put it into place.
And the whole point of this, guys, is I expect progress. If there's no progress in this, what's the point? This isn't just beneficial on a financial level to me, just beneficial. It's that I actually want people's lives to be changed. If it's not actually changed for the better, physically, financially, spiritually, and emotionally, then really what's the point? Is because if I only can affect your checkbook, I really haven't changed your life. And see, this is one of the things on a lot of this. This is why we're going through these different dynamics, is that we're trying to show you this isn't stuck to one side, to one pattern, that is literally in every single area. And if you don't acknowledge it's in every single area, you're going to have a lot of money and a horrible emotional state, a horrible marriage, a horrible relationship with your kids, no friends. Those kind of things. Why? Because you don't value the proper things. You're not keeping your first thing first. You're not keeping the main thing the main thing. So because your values, and we'll talk about this in a different level at a later point, but you're not keeping your core value, your gravity center, to the center of where all your values, your core values are. So you're allowing all your value system to be spread out. And those kind of things, and you're not keeping the main things the main thing. And so you really lose focus. And by losing focus, you actually won't accomplish anything. You won't have any progress. It's because you have no focus. And so that kind of being said, I'm gonna touch on a couple of new subjects. Otherwise, I'm going to run out of time on session two. But the next one is, and I'm kind of stealing this from my pastor. He's writing and or wrote a book on fathers, brothers, sons, and I'm going to add a fourth point is significant others. So fathers or mothers, they're at, remember again, these are the ones above you. They're the ones in authority over you. They're responsible for you. This could be emotionally. This could be physically. This could be spiritually. So each one of these, they are the ones above you. So they are your teacher, they're your mentor, they're coach, they're the ones that are above you. And remember again, one of the questions is do you have right to correct them? And the answer most of the time is no, never. And so just because they're wrong doesn't give you right to correct them. They've lived longer than you. And so when you've lived longer than them, then you can correct them. So that's not going to happen. Number two is brothers and sisters. This is actually where most of our relationships are, because you usually have one boss and 20 colleagues that work with you. So really, most of the time, we're actually operating in such a form that it's brothers and sisters. Now, this is again where we get back up on the upper topic about the kind of the four questions of, is it your place to say it? Did they ask you? Will they receive anything from you? And is it beneficial, uplifting, or necessary? And so that being said, did they ask you? Lots of times, brothers or sisters, you kind of have an open rapport, and they'll tell you, hey, man, if I'm missing something or whatever the case is, whatever it is, you come let me know. Well, that's an open-ended invitation that says that, hey, I have permission. See, now, I have a slightly different relationship with my mom, and that's based off of the previous CD where I made that really harsh comment. And I told my mom, she said, you did what? I said, yes, I used it in reference to teaching about the material. She said, it was harsh, but it's still true. But see, here's one of the things. I have that type of relationship with my mother. It's very open. We have that established more of a brother slash sister relationship. But here's the thing. I never forget she's my mother. So regardless of the fact, I know she always is above me. She always has that authority above me. And so even I can say certain things that I know that she can receive an Excedra. Why? Because remember, again, can they receive it? Did they ask you? Those kind of things. And so that's where you can have that open rapport depending on the trust level in the relationship. And I think the comment I made about trust is proof that they value you. And so depending on how much they trust you, depending on how much they value you, depends on how much that you can speak into their life or communicate or say things that may be a little harder or et cetera. Because if there's no trust, they don't really value your opinion. And so they didn't ask you and it won't be received because they don't value your opinion. So it goes back to that side of it. So brothers and sisters, you got to make sure as you're communicating on a horizontal level, that it's not vertical, because the second it becomes vertical, it's either a father or a son or a daughter or a mother, depending on your context. Now, that being said, if it's horizontal, you have a lot more freedom in how you can say things, and it's a lot more forgiving. The relationships are more forgiving because they associate you as a peer. And so with you being associated as a peer, there's a lot more freedom in mistakes. And by the way, this is actually one reason where fathers get in trouble with sons and that sons get mad at their fathers. Here's one of the main reasons why, is because sons always have a higher expectation of their father because the father's setting the example. And one of the comments that I had noticed on one of my Facebook posts not too long ago, it says, every father should remember that one day his son will follow his example instead of his advice. And so when you're aware of that, then you need to know that there's a different level of expectation. Why? Because you're above. And they know they're not supposed to correct you. So the question is, if you're wrong, are you willing to even at least have a conversation about it? And if you're not, the son will lose all respect for the father because the father is prideful and is no longer teachable. Not that it's the son's job, but he won't acknowledge that he has any faults. And so because he won't acknowledge any faults, the son says, I don't want to be like him. And so this is where some of the correlation, and again, it doesn't have to be on just that side. It could be like a boss and an employee. Employee goes, looks at his boss. Boss lies about something or says something to somebody else behind their back. Well, then the person goes and says, did you say that? And then they lie about it. Well, then the son, because see, it, again, it's still that same level. The son, the employee, looks at the father, the boss, and says, okay, well, I don't want to be like this person. And so then again, we start losing influence. Why? Because they're above. See, whenever you're in a above role, no matter how the role is assigned, whenever you've been put in that place, regardless if you think yourself as a brother, see, and again, I do this with Charles in some aspects, but in some aspects he's kind of a father, but in most cases he's a brother. But I hold him at a different expectation level because there's certain things that he's done I want to try to accomplish in my life. And so because of it, that standard was raised. And so whenever that standard is raised, they're held at a higher expectation. And so if you don't live up to the expectation, you lose influence. Now, here's the part that's interesting. You set the expectation based off of what your commentary was. So if you say you're supposed to act like this, talk like this, speak like this, and et cetera. So whenever I look at you and you're not doing what you said I should be doing, then you destroy your own influence based off of the rules you set for you. See, this is the part that's interesting about this. This is why I apologize to my kids frequently. I will tell them, guys, I wish you had a better dad. I wish I could be a better dad. Hey, guys, I screwed up royally. I made all sorts of mistakes. I lost my temper. I did this. I shouldn't have did this. I wasn't listening to you. I should have been listening to you more. Hey, that thing over here. You shouldn't have corrected me on this, but I understand why you're doing it. Da 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 da. List goes on. And so that being said, my sons will say, well, you know, all things considering, you're a really good dad, especially based off of some of my friends. Why? I got some grace. Why? Because I never expected them to be perfect. I never set the standard that they were supposed to be perfect. One of my rules with my kids is not do you got straight A's, even though both my sons have had honors and straight A's and all sorts of stuff and dual enrollment and done exceptionally well in school. My rule was never you have to make A's. I only had really one rule. I don't care how much you study, which a lot of parents will say, oh, this is wrong when I say this whole phrase. This is what my rule has been over schooling. And they'll show you kind of how I have set some things up. John Maxwell made the comment. He said, if you want your kids to get paid to take out the trash, give them an allowance to take out the trash. He said, because whatever you reward them for will set their mindset for what they should be rewarded for. He said, so I never rewarded my kids for chores because that's life. He said, I rewarded them for reading books and excelling in academics and et cetera. Why? Because he wanted to set a mental precedent. If you will change your mind, it'll affect your checkbook. And so that's something, is either John Maxwell or Max Licato that said that. Now, that being said, is if you understand the relationship, and like what I did with my sons, is I would tell them, okay, you get $5 A, $3 a B, nothing for C's, and you get grounded if you get D's. D's and lower are never acceptable, no matter what. And so here was my rule, is if you got a D, and you did not bring it up by the end of the nine weeks, you lost all of your games and things. You got bedtimes. You lost like probably 80% of your privileges and entertainment. And now you got to go back to basically being treated like a 4-year-old. And so now you got to go to bed at 10 o'clock. Now you got to earn TV time. Now you got to earn video time. You got to ask before you do it. Well, my kids love their freedom. And so basically I've only had to do it to them both one time each where they lost all their stuff for 9 weeks. And then all of a sudden they have more motivation to study and do those type of things. Why? Because I set the standard. What was my standard that I set? And I always told them, it's not about making A's. It's always about, did you do your best? That's the standard. Your best, not my best, not what I could do, not what I'm capable of, not with my knowledge, my mentality, my mindset, with my perseverance, not with mine. Did you do your best? And so I would ask them, they get in trouble, did you do your best? They said yes, fine. How much time did you spend in studying? Well, I didn't spend any. You didn't do your best. It's real simple. And tell me you did your best with no effort, you're lying. Now, one of my sons, he was taking AP chemistry in 10th grade, and he got a D, and it had like a curve with a B. And I still told him, dude, I don't care. It's a D. He's like, but there's a curve. I get like a B out of it. I'm like, I don't care. You got a D. I said, if you couldn't have got a C or higher, you shouldn't have took the course until you could have gotten yourself to be able to do it. He's like, man, he said, I was studying like 3 hours a night, and he really was. He actually did not sleep due to some classwork for 36 hours to make sure he had it all done because it was 100 pages of typed information, so a crazy amount. He said, well, man, that's just not fair. I said, I agree. It's not fair. I said, welcome to life. It's not fair. And so That being said, lots of times when we go to do things is what was the standard set? So if you're a boss and you're going to gripe about showing up on time, are you on time? See, this is how you lose the influence. It's not about the time. That's really irrelevant. The question is, do you even live to the bar you expect others to live to? And if you don't, you destroy your influence. And so the last one of the relationship side, which is kind of in a category by itself, which is significant other. They're not your daughter. So if you're a husband, they are not your daughter. You are not to correct them. Which this gets really interesting. And as adults and in relationships, it can become difficult sometimes. But they're not your father or your mother. So wives aren't supposed to act like mothers, and they're not supposed to act like daughters. And they are not at a only equal level. They are a individual. They are separate. They are in a category all of their own. Why? Because they know all your junk. They know your good and bad. You can't tell, you can tell your father one thing, and you can tell your son one thing, and you can tell your brother another thing, and they can all have a different perspective of you. But almost always your significant other, your spouse, whoever you want to call it, knows for a fact all the stuff you hadn't talked about. So they know you good, you bad, you ugly, you up, you down, what you said, what you didn't say, the tone, the clenching your jaw, the attitude. You know, they know all those things. And then they know how you acted for the last 2 weeks while you standing up there trying to act all spiritual like you somebody important. And so they know all that goofiness. Doesn't make you less of a person, or that you don't have real authority, and it doesn't make you less than of adult and all these type of things. It just simply pulls out the fact that you really have to pay attention to where you're at. And so that being said, you just really have to pay attention to their relationship and your relationship with them, and just really watch out for how your relationship is with them, and not to treat them like they're above or below or sideways or all these other things, but to realize they kind of are in a class all by themselves, and that you need to establish relationships and those kind of things with them, and to keep it at a level field.